what is the necessity of cots and beds? When one can use his own arms, what is the necessity of a pillow? When one can use the palms of his hands, what is the necessity of varieties of utensils? When there is ample covering or the skins of trees, what is the necessity of clothing? The necessities of life for the protection and comfort of the body must not be unnecessarily increased. Human energy is spoiled in a vain search after such illusory happiness. If one is able to lie down on the floor, then why should one endeavor to get a good bedstead or soft cushion to lie on? If one can rest without any pillow and make use of the soft arms endowed by nature, there's no necessity of searching after a pillow. If we make a study of the general life of the animals, we can see that they have no intelligence for building big houses, furniture, and other household paraphernalia. And yet, they maintain a healthy life by lying down on the open land. They do not know how to cook or prepare foodstuff, yet they still live healthy lives more easily than the human being. This does not mean that human civilization should revert to animal life, or that the human being should live naked in the jungles without any culture, education, and sense of morality. An intelligent human being cannot live the life of an animal. Rather, man should try to utilize his intelligence in arts, in science, poetry, and philosophy. In such a way, he can further the progressive march of human civilization. But here, the idea given by Srila Shukadev Goswami is that the reserve energy of human life, which is far superior to that of animals, should simply be utilized for self-realization. Advancement of human civilization must be taught the goal of establishing our lost relationship with God, which is not possible in any form of life other than the human. One must realize the nullity of the material phenomenon, considering it a passing phantasmagoria, and must endeavor to make a solution to the miseries of life. Self-complacence with a polished type of animal civilization geared to sense gratification is delusion, and such a civilization is not worthy of the name. Let us please hear this again, because this is one of the billions and trillions master sentences of Prabhupada. Self-complacence with a polished type of animal civilization geared to sense gratification is delusion, and such a civilization is not worthy of the name. In pursuit of such false activities, a human being is in the clutches of Maya or illusion. Great sages and saints in the days of yore were not living in palatial buildings furnished with good furniture and so-called amenities of life. They used to live in huts and roofs and sit on the flat ground, and yet they have left immense treasures of high knowledge with all perfection. Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Sanatana Goswami were high-ranking ministers of state, but they were able to leave behind them immense writings on transcendental knowledge while residing only for one night underneath one tree. They did not live even two nights under the same tree. And what to speak of well-furnished rooms with modern amenities? And still, they were able to give us most important literatures of self-realization. So-called comforts of life are not actually helpful for progressive civilization. Rather, they are detrimental to such progressive life. in the system of Sanatana Dharma, of four divisions of social life and four orders of progressive realization, there are ample opportunities and sufficient directions for a happy termination of the progressive life. And the sincere followers are advised therein to accept a voluntary life of renunciation in order to achieve the desired goal of life. If one is not accustomed to abiding by the life of renunciation itself, abnegation, from the beginning, one should try to get into the habit at a later stage of life, as recommended by Srila Sukadeva Goswami, and that will help one to achieve the desired success. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pistaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deva Gauravani Pracharine Devase Sasunyavari Kaskatyari Shatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaurava Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Before attempting to speak, I want to ask permission by my superior, because otherwise I will create the offense of jumping over the older devotees. Satyam chito kim kashipo purashare vaho smasitte yupabar hanaikim Satyam jalo kim puradhana patya dikvalalano satikim dukulai. Translation: when there are ample earthly flats to lie on, what is the necessity of cots and beds? When one can use his own arms, what is the necessity of a pillow? When one can use the palms of his hands, what is the necessity of varieties of utensils? When there is ample covering for the skins of trees, what is the necessity of clothing? In this lecture we will try to discuss this verse in two perspectives of lights of contemplation. First is a contemplation into the home of ISKCON. In this verse, a simple life is advocated. And an example of the six Goswamis in Vrindavan is given. Although our materialistic environment thinks that living a simple life without the amenities and facilities granted by the demoniac civilization of today's, one will revert to the animal life. However, the example of the six Goswamis is given as a counter-argument. These six Goswamis lived in a very simple life. It is described that Srila Sanatana Goswami would sleep for a minimum amount of numbers, minimum amount of hours, and he would also work in the night writing his literature. Now, to attain light, he did not use, or did not, no question of use, he did not have electricity, so he simply made a heap of leaves and burned those leaves. He must have applied some oil or something, and in that light he wrote his scripture. These Goswamis did not have any home. They did not even stay under the home of one tree. In other words, they used to change trees every night. Of course, there is also an esoteric reason, but Prabhupada uses this example to show how simple they used to live. Still, they produced immense literature. Even today, the writings of the Goswamis are considered the peak in philosophy. There are several universities who have a special chair that they only teach the Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami, because these Sandarbhas attest to such a lofty philosophical outlook that it needs the most intelligent being to try to understand, and they don't understand. So, a human civilization actually should not invest the energy into creating these amenities of material civilization, because this will bring them back to the level of the senses, where they will become like polished animals. An animal only knows his basic instincts. So the human civilization, with its bombastic creations, has only teamed to the basic animal propensities. It has not developed such writing as Jiva Goswami. It has, at best, created some mental speculation for the glorification of some sexual activities. So, still, we, living in this civilization, use the products of the civilization. We use computers for communication, and more important, for printing our books. We use cars for traveling and reaching the modern civilization. We use highly sophisticated cooking instruments in our kitchen. We use this beep clocks, wristwatches, and we use tape recorders. So many things we use. We use it. Does this mean we have become traitors of our philosophy? We have left the philosophy of the Goswamis? No. It is Rupa Goswami who has given us the instruction that we do not use things which can be used for the glorification of the Krishna, or the spreading of the Krishna conscious movement. This is actually Maya. Prapancha kataya buddhi. Pancha means five. Prapancha means that which is expanded from the five. What is the five? Those are the material elements: earth, water, fire, air, and ether. He who has this intelligence, to think that that which is expanded of the five elements, these material facilities, cannot be used in Krishna service. That is actually a lower type of vairagya, not a very high understanding. So at the same time, we have to ask ourselves critical questions. Have we become attached to using these facilities? Have we become dependent to using these facilities? What is, if we do not have our comfortable cars, if we do not have our comfortable heating arrangements, will we flip out and become highly disturbed? What is if we go on parayatra? Some devotees are strong followers of parayatra. He is one person, so since this was a festival of fanatics, allow another fanatic to speak. It is very good for each and every devotee to test his own life, how far he's advanced Prabhupada says, the life of renunciation and self-abnegation. This is important. If one is not accustomed to abiding by the life of renunciation and self-abnegation from the beginning, one should try to get into the habit at a later stage of life, as recommended by Srila Shukadev Goswami, and that will help one to achieve the desired success. Now, I'm not saying that we should all go on parayatra or try to now live a life of self-abnegation. Once in our own preaching experience, there was our preaching leader, and he decided to get into this by following Chaturmasya. Some of you have heard about these austere vows. A devotee who follows Chaturmasya has different opportunities to follow vows. One, for instance, is to eat like the cow. That means he will bend down to the ground and will eat his lips touching the food which is lying on the ground and try to bring it up in a V angle into the stomach. Yes, something like a V angle. A V angle. It's the first go up and then travel down. This is not very pleasant eating. It is a torture. You want to try it, you have to gulp like anything and then contract this tube to bring it up. Anyway, there are even more severe things. Since we have newcomers, we won't even try to get into an elaborate description of the extreme practices of Chaturmasya. One is you do not eat the whole day, and only after sunset you eat. You have to lie down without a blanket on the floor, so on. This vow gives you benefit. Following austerity always sharpens your enthusiasm and rewards you with spiritual realization. So one of our devotees was trying to do this in an elaborate fashion, and he received an admonishing letter of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, no, this is not tapasya. The real tapasya is to follow the orders of the spiritual master. And this is what we mean. It was often said that to go on Sankirtan is more tapasya than following the rigid austerities performed by yogis in different ages. And it is a fact. Because if you want to go on Sankirtan, and if you want to go on a lifelong Sankirtan mission, you will have to learn the ultimate challenge to all yoga practitioners, and that is to control the mind by drawing it away from self or egocentric sense gratification. And this is what is Sankirtan. I mean, this is the reason why a personality like me is not a very good Sankirtan devotee. My mind it goes into different areas and wants to work there. So there are services for such devotees also, but a Sankirtan devotee has to really control his mind. Like Rohini Sudha Prabhu, he said, when he was doing these 500 books, and 300 books, 400 books, he said, don't think it's easy for me. My mind is spacing out like anything. He tells me stories of other services, and I really have to force my mind into this. Don't think it's easy. And I saw him. His face was very, very serious. Sankirtan devotee is a very serious personality because he does not allow his mind to wander around. He focuses it on Krishna. This is a very, this is a high point of pitch of tapasya. And if we can learn this, then we will not be guilty of using Rupa Goswami's allowance for our own sense gratification. This is what we should learn. So this was looking into the home of the economy. Now we will look a little bit outside. We might ask ourselves if this is the standard of civilization, to be not dependent on the dangerous toys of modern civilization. Why has modern civilization developed into a lunatic house where people are completely bound hand and foot to these modern amenities? I will give you one example from New York. There was a blackout. It was many years ago. There was no electricity supply for modern men. That meant the tragic loss of the TV program for one night. People were not able to tune themselves into the 42 possibilities of illusion. In that night, was the most scandalous, as far as I'm concerned, it's the most scandalous example of the degraded state modern civilization has sunken in. When there was no light, people became psychotic wrecks. Gentlemen were breaking out of their houses, robbing the shops to have their private adventure of manlyhood or whatever. People who could not see TV turned crazy. Some who were a little bit more dexterous did the only thing which kept them from turning crazy. It's so disgusting. They just did sex life. There was a statistical analysis which showed that night many, many people were just, you know, jumping on each other, forgetting even their sinful means to avoid pregnancy. This is a point. Anyways, don't want to get too much into the detail. They were helpless because of the lack of TV. People are helpless if they don't have their drugs, the alcohol, and so on and so forth. Modern civilization has created fortune junkies. That means, this is a slang expression which denotes a person who dependent on heroin. Although modern civilization challenges religion by saying religion is the opiate of the people, meaning that religion is deceiving the people by promising them later enjoyment, a God-conscious enjoyment, they are guilty of doing the same thing. We can easily counterback materialism is the heroin of the masses, and we can show it by many, many examples. Another example, because this is an important point for even Sankirtan devotees to understand and to preach to these people. Not long ago, there was a survey taken on this sportsman done by the Max Planck Institute of Munich, which is a very famous institute. They made this survey amongst people who were shortly before entering the Olympic contest. So you need to run 200 meters in so and so many seconds in order to be allowed to enter the contest. So these sportsmen, who were the test figures, were lacking a hundredth of a second to have the required qualification to run around in the Olympic Games. So these were the test persons, and the test was, we have a drug for you created which cannot be detected in the blood by those who investigate the sports people to see if there's any doping, which will increase your running for a marvelous amount of time. I forgot the time, but this time span would even allow the modern man, these runners, to have a fair chance to be number three or four or in this running contest. There's only one thing wrong with this drug. After yet 1 year, you have to die. There is no counter medicine for this drug. Now, how many of those who were questioned? They were questioned privately. How many do you think agreed to take this drug? Anyways, this is not a time for speculation. I think you wouldn't take this drug to run around in a foolish serpent for some name, fame, and glory. The same old story. It was 90% who agreed to it. And I heard it from a person who was involved in the test and who had no reason to exaggerate to me. This means how foolish the modern civilization has become. And this is only possible by giving the explanation which was given by Srila Hari Krishna Maharaj yesterday and the day before. It's the influence of the demons. Now, here we want to read a few challenging questions of Srila Prabhupada, who puts this whole bombastic civilization into question. He says, this is taken from the 10th chapter of the first canto, where the idyllic life was is described when Maharaj Yudhisthira reigned the earth. During the reign, this is the shloka, of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the clouds showered all the water that people needed, and the earth produced all the necessities of man in profusion. Due to its fatty milk bag and cheerful attitude, the cow used to moisten. Things Kapitel, verse 5. So due to the fatty milk bag and cheerful attitude, the cow used to moisten the grazing ground with milk. The devatas is described. There's so much in cooperation with the Raja Rishis that they personally would take care that the rain would only fall in the night. Prabhupada explains it in the purport. Now, he speaks that there were enough pearls and grains and fruits all in abundance. Now his questions come, and no one in this demonic civilization will be able to answer the question of Srila Prabhupada. If there is enough milk, enough grains, enough fruit, enough cotton, enough silk, and enough jewels, then why do the people need cinemas, houses of prostitution, slaughterhouses, etc.? What is the need of an artificial, luxurious life of cinema, cars, radio, flash, and hotels? Has this civilization produced anything but quarreling, individually and nationally? Has this civilization enhanced the cause of equality and fraternity by sending thousands of men into a hellish factory in the war fields at the whims of a particular man? No. Just consider the war which is the breakfast of 1991, the Gulf War. In America, the land of the good, people get psyched up for this war because this demonic civilization geared by the big money of the banks and the Rothschilds and so on and so forth is down. The dollar is sick.
in world economy. Therefore, they need a war. Hmm. So, but since we all live in a human civilization, at least by name, and liberality has become very big, Gorbachev is a hero even amongst Americans, who used to say better red than dead, better dead than red. they are now shaking hands because Gorbachev has changed so much. So it's not so easy to make a war. Now, what do these demons make? They produce with their nifty technology war movies, which are very, very nice. If you look at them, they look like adventure, they look like game, they look like bringing all the desires of the human being out, they look like bringing peace and prosperity over the human. These are shown in TV. I heard this. Work like this. So it's going. Let's see. What is the karma? What's written in the karma books regarding this war and the consequences for the planet Earth of this. Anyways, not to get too much into the detail. The demons. It's a time of the demons. There is no question of this. The demons have brought us into a great need. How to express this? Oh, very difficult in English. The demons have made a hell into this world. This is the easiest thing to say. So, and therefore, people have been brainwashed on all frontiers to think that a spiritual life means a primitive life. Our enemies say, all these Hare Krishnas, they want to bring us back to a primitive life because they have been brainwashed by these demons. However, this is not true. So, now, this much I want to say to the verse. We continue on with Krishna. See, Krishna has been described in the scriptures as Adokshaya. That means he cuts down the perceptions of the conditioned soul. Ada means down, Aksha means eyes, or and Ja means birth. In this world, the conditioned soul can only perceive things which take birth in his visual perception. Krishna, however, cannot be seen by these eyes. Now, another meaning of Aksha is a more general understanding of the senses. The eye is the most prominent of the senses, the leader of the senses, and therefore Aksha means also in a broader sense perception. See, Krishna is always above the perception of modern men. Therefore, although this civilization is very demoniac, and it looks in some ways depressing, Krishna has a transcendental plan which cannot be perceived by these demons. This plan is very obvious to the devotees, and this plan has been brought to even to all of us by this wonderful festival. Let us dwell for a moment on this wonderful plan of Sri Krishna. In the 10th canto, Prabhupada has said Krishna has taken birth in the womb of the International Society. In other places, our movement has been described as a preaching movement, and at other places have been said the most potent arm of the preaching is the Sankirtan mission. This book distribution is directly Krishna's plan to create a wonderful civilization in even in the midst of Kali Yuga. Our devotees have many times heard the statement that within Kali Yuga there is what is called a Yuga Santya. That means a period where Satya Yuga-like conditions will appear. And many devotees have questioned, where exactly is this in Prabhupada's books? I think we heard this. So, by Krishna's grace, just before coming to this festival, I read where it, not just before, I must say it was 1 month before I came to the festival, but I thought I would present this. There is a conversation with Tama Krishna Maharaj and other devotees asked Prabhupada about this statement. What's about these 10,000 years of Satya Yuga? And Prabhupada, he says, wrote this in black and white, yes, they will come. They will come by book distribution. Please, this, I want to dig this out. I must say, I read it, I felt so enthusiastic, and I put the book down, and I put it back in the shelf, and I walked, and then I thought, what a fool I am. I have not even written down where it is, I have not even sent it around to all of you. And then I wanted to go back to the book, but then a call came, and I preached for 1 hour on the telephone, and after that I had forgotten everything about that quote. But I will bring it, and I have an idea where it is. In other words, Sangadhar men and women, your task is great. You will create, you will change the history by going out and doing big book distribution. You will create a situation which was yesterday so nicely said in the Sankirtan meeting. The demons will think, oh wow, there's so many Prabhupada books here on this planet Earth. There's no use in taking birth here. The atmosphere is not not just right for us. We have no chance. Okay, for 10,000 years, but afterwards we come back. So this is very nice understanding. By pumping out this literature in great quantities, we will create Satya Yuga-like circumstances. This is Krishna's plan, and this has been said in so many lectures. There's even Shastic quotes to substantiate this. For instance, Kina, Kirata, Munendra, Pulinda, Pulkasha, Abhira, Jamba, Abhira, Abhira something, Kasharaya, Gendhera Vidaksha Vimukta Maninas. Sorry, I'm a little excited. This verse is not just present in my memory. Let's have it in German and in English. By the influence of the great devotee, even those who are born in the Mongolia, in eastern, in parts of eastern Germany, in Andhra, Pulinda, and so on, even they can come to pure Krishna consciousness. This is a prophecy of this verse, and it's coming true. Kunandra means parts of East Germany, and all the books were distributed in East Germany, because East Germany didn't have so many books and the prophecy could not come true, so therefore it's Krishna's plan to distribute there so many books. In other words, this whole materialistic civilization is coming back to, is prepared as a stage where Krishna consciousness will reign supreme. Please do not doubt this. And it will be done by Sankirtan. This is the inconceivable plan of the Lord. We may not understand it with our mind. All the perception which we have through our senses may think, oh, this is impossible. Look at the ecological disaster. how will you have such situations? Have you not heard that the North Pole and South Pole will melt and water will overflood the whole planet Earth? No, the demons are not more powerful than Krishna's plan and Krishna's desire. So now let us consider our place in all this. I think everyone on the Sankirtan mission, who was here in the Sankirtan meeting, feels great inspiration to distribute books throughout the years. Even such a personality, even personalities who are not so good in distribution, they come and asked, can I go on distribution? Today even a devotee came, he said, actually I would have to go back to the Heidelberg temple, but do you think I can go on book distribution? And I said, well, I wish but it is my friend. I will warn him, I will preach to him that he lets you go on distribution. He usually fulfills my desires. Just go, don't even return to the temple. This is under the ecstasy of the meeting. So, anyways, this is, but we, at the same time, I feel that there might be some doubt lurking in the hearts of the devotees. Will I be able to do this? This doubt may be overcome by the ecstatic festival. But we all know we don't have every day this festival. So let us discuss a few hints how we can prepare ourselves for a year of ecstatic Sankirtan. Of course, we can only attempt to give some food of thought here. You will have this point of this subject you will all have to think about, and you will have to prepare your own self for going out, and you will have to experiment how you can be inspired and enthusiastic throughout the year. Now there is a very important point. Sankirtan has been described as Pada Sevana, serving the lotus feet of the Lord. It has been described as dasyam, by becoming a servant of the Lord. Why so? A servant fulfills the desires of the master. Krishna has a desire to elevate the conditioned souls. So by doing sankirtan, you fulfill the desire of your master. That's why you perform dasyam. Now, Jiva Goswami has hinted to us that all limbs of devotional service are dependent on Shravanam and Kirtanam. That means, of course, hearing and chanting. Hearing is done in two ways. Hearing is done by hearing Krishna's holy name, and hearing is done by hearing about Krishna. Now, dealing first with hearing Krishna's holy name. There are 10 offenses which are to be avoided while hearing it. And the prime offense, which is the breeding ground of all other offenses, is inattention while chanting the holy name. This inattention by chanting the holy name is the breeding ground of all offenses. In other words, if you can work a little bit on chanting the holy name with full attention, you can avoid the other offenses. Now there are three causes of inattention, which all spring from the desire to enjoy. One cause is das ist Gleichgültigkeit nochmal. Was? Indifference. Yes, thank you. indifference. When we chant Krishna's holy name, we cannot be indifferent to Krishna. We must know, this is now my time where I am together with Krishna in the form of his holy name. He has said so, that Lord Chaitanya has said so. I'm not in the hearts of devotees. I'm there where my devotees chant my holy name. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said so. That Rupa Goswami said, by chanting the holy name, he is dancing on the tongue. Why are we indifferent? This is because we have no attraction to Krishna. Indifference. Then we wandering of the mind. Even if we should not think by chanting the holy name, oh, I have this to do, that to do, this to do, that to do during the day. If our mind is overly active during this period, take a piece of paper, write it down, then it's out of the mind, it's on the paper. And you can go back when the time comes to do your service. And the other point is laziness. Now I personally do not want to dwell so much on these three points at this stage. You could read them in the book Harinam Chintamani. If you read German, there is a book in German language where this is explained, how to avoid it, explained. Today I want to give one piece of advice. This is not my own advice, so therefore I'm very bold in stating this. Please, Prabhus, we are in intimate association here. Let us be a little self-analytical at this point. How much do we hear the holy name when we chant it? And how often do we think of other things, or how often are we just dull? I would say, speaking of me, very often. So, there is a simple piece of advice which might help. When thoughts enter your mind, which is a diversion from chanting the holy name, which creates in you the offense of inattention, be very careful of this. These thoughts sometimes enter the mind like rascals who are dressed in dirty shoes and who come into our temple. Would you allow such a rascal with dirty shoes to come into this sacred assemblies of Vaishnavas and urinate on the floor? Certainly not. We would take our strongest and most experienced men and they would deal with the problem. So, in the same way, the thoughts enter the mind. Be watchful. Post some guards at the door of your awareness and throw these thoughts out immediately. Now, these guards, they must be armed with intelligence, with discriminating power. When these thoughts come, sometimes we dwell on this. We don't use our intelligence. We don't throw them out immediately. Now this is the second point I want to make. We should raise. We should hear our chanting of the holy name very attentively. We should not allow our mind to wander. Second point is, we must read the books. Because if we do not have transcendental food to strengthen our mind against the onslaught of these thoughts and against the onslaught of the atheistic propaganda all around us, we will be weakened. Srila Prabhupada said that he, at one time, and I forget exactly when it was, he was at the end of the Chaitanya Charitamrita translating it, and he translated a verse by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami which says, the devotee who only eats ordinary grains and does not taste the nectarine pastimes of Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he will fall down from the transcendental position. This is and he wrote a verbal Prabhupada, and he posted this into all the temples that his devotee should read this. Don't just eat, but read. This is spiritual food. This is very important if you want to remain strong in your sankirtan practice. It is the philosophy of passionate men to not read. Just like if you are so much in a hurry that you say no time for filling gas in the car. And this is not a clever proposition. You have to, even though your feet are aching, and believe me, I also know what this means to stand in a queue and in a line, and you have to be at a preaching program, and you know this will take 10 minutes. I mean, and after trying all your tricks to get in the front of the line and nothing worked, and everyone is against you, on the, you have to stand there. But you can't allow to just leave the gasoline station and run, because you will stop. You will stop maybe for, it takes a few hours, then your gasoline runs out to get new gasoline for somehow to stop cars or whatever. So this reading practice is very, very important. It has been stated by over and over again. There's a suggestion by Srila Harikesh Maharaj of 2 hours. This is very, very nice. We will get our strengths from there. We will get our discrimination power to throw out everything which is unimportant. It is only a very strong devotee who can throw out all the thoughts of Maya. It requires strength. Sometimes we feel lonesome because we do not have enough strength, and we allow Maya to enter our mind and steal us sometimes days of our Krishna conscious life. Because we have some mental, so on and so forth, running in our mind. It takes strength to say, no, I don't want to marry. No. It may be hard, but this is a diversion. I don't want to think about this thing now. Anyways, I don't want to go into psychoanalysis. I'm known for this. this circle, I don't want to get into all the shadows in the mind of a devotee who is not sufficiently strong by the strengths from the spiritual literature. You all know what we mean, and you can fill this with your own examples. So, therefore, attentive chanting, which is done easily by posting a strong guard before the doors of your perception, very important for our Sankirtan year, and reading the books is very, very important. Even those of you who do not have so much taste, because you never actually read 2 hours at a stretch and so on. Sometimes the books say, no, you don't enter my secret, because they want to wait how persistent you are. But try to read every day. After some time, the taste will come. Rest assured, Krishna will give this. Because Srimata Sakada Krishna Punya Shavana Kirana, this shloka says, Krishna becomes your friend if you hear about him. So, I want to conclude this by speaking about Krishna in a direct way. This will not take very long, but this is very important. It is very, very important to hear this. This is a leela of Krishna, which has a very important mission, a very important meaning for the devotees. This will be a surprise for some of you to hear. For the old timers, it will be nectar.
because they will be reminded of something they heard.
Have you ever noticed that Prabhupada, in the Krishna book, at the end of some Leela of Krishna, there are blessings. Says someone who reads this will be free of enviousness, for instance. So, the different Leelas of Sri Krishna have a very important blessing to give to us. And I want to give you, tell you one Leela, and at the end tell you the blessing this Leela gives to you. In an advanced stage of Krishna consciousness, the devotees meditate on certain Leelas of Krishna, knowing that by remembering this Leela, or hoping that by remembering this Leela, Krishna will demolish certain materialistic tendencies within the heart. So because we were discussing, read the books, we want to give, you know, one Leela from Krishna book, which might help you if you understand this and read it and enjoy it time and time again. Prabhupada, he was very eager to give us the Krishna book in a summary form, and he said, everyone who reads this will become a devotee. So this is what we want to become, and now please listen to this Leela. Once Sri Krishna brought the cowherd boys to the bank of the Jamuna, the cows and the cowherd boys, and they drank water and fell down unconscious. Why? That water was poisoned by the dangerous serpent Kaliya. Kaliya is was such a dangerous creature. Kaliya created a lake of poison. The acharyas tell us that this was not directly inside the Jamuna, it was on the side of the Jamuna, because in Mathura there was no poison at that time. So this lake of poison was 8 miles across. And 8 miles around this lake, no grass could grow. Even if the breeze would bring some of the drops of poison to trees, the trees would die. Birds who were flying over this lake would drop down dead. This sounds like, you know, the ecological disasters brought about by modern-day demons. Kaliya was such a demon. He was a very powerful one. So when inside the lake of poison, Kaliya, by applying the mystical potency called Jala Stambha, Stambha means pillar, had created a huge palace where he was enjoying his demoniac life of sense gratification. So, Krishna, of course, well, I will summarize this. There's so many details, but let's get to the essence. Krishna, after seeing that his boys had drunk it from the poisonous water, immediately looked at them and brought them back to life and decided to finish the demon. He jumped on the only, he climbed on the only tree which was still in flower. It was a Kadamba tree, which by the arrangement of Sri Krishna was still alright. Said Garuda once dropped a drop on it, so therefore it could blossom. And it served the pastime. Why should Krishna climb on a ecological raped tree? He went on this blooming, blossoming tree, and then he jumped into the lake. Now it is described that for 100 bow lengths, the water flooded the land. Krishna, his body is not what we think it is. It was a huge impact. It's just waves were created like flood waves who went over the land. Kaliya down there, you can understand, wow, he is an intruder and he is powerful. So the first thing Krishna did is creating the music. He's the original master of all talents, so he made an exhibition of swimming, but it was musical swimming. The way he splashed in the water, it created very nice ragas. And he gave some musical concert first. This is what is done in a cultural stage. He wanted to perform his pastime, so that's some introductory music he played. So then Kaliya emerged to the surface and he looked and he saw it was a little boy. He was amazed. He glanced at the Lord with fiery hot eyes. Then he jumped at Krishna. Now, please let for understanding who was Kaliya. He was a very, very ferocious creature. This creature has never been sufficiently painted because it's impossible in three dimension, two dimensional painting. The attempt to somehow draw a third dimension in it, to bring the multidimensional Kaliya into scene. He had 101 prominent heads, but thousand heads altogether. Don't try to understand how this biologically will work. He is a demon, and he can do this. So, the first thing he did is biting Krishna into the chest, and then surrounding him with his powerful coils, and trying to, you know, press him. Krishna allowed this for the dramatic effect of it. He was there. I don't know. He smiled. This is described. He smiled, but he was surrounded by the